This is Bioethics Radio. I'm Meg Weiss. Imagine this. You are a 26-year-old female born without a uterus. Because of this, doctors have told you that if you wish to be a mother, your only options are to have another woman gestate your child as a surrogate or to pursue adoption. You begin to hear about research being done for a new surgery, uterine transplantation, that could help fix your problem and allow you to become pregnant. The researchers tell you about the risks of the surgery as well as the success the surgery has already seen, and you agree to be part of the trial and undergo a 10-hour operation. When you wake up, they tell you that everything went well and the surgery was successful. A week later, the hospital asks to hold a press conference. After all, you were their first successful participant in the trial. At the press conference, all of the doctors relay their optimism about the research. You leave feeling confident and excited. But just a few hours later, you start bleeding and rush back to the hospital. You are rushed into surgery, and when you wake up, you are told that the uterus that had been transplanted into your body had to be removed. This was the experience of Lindsay McFarland. In February of 2016, Lindsay became the first woman in the United States to have undergone a uterine transplant. Although the surgery was initially declared successful by the surgical team, Lindsay developed a yeast infection, causing bleeding and eventually requiring that the transplanted uterus be removed. There are many aspects of the research and the procedure that are controversial. One such controversy is what promises doctors can make and the language surrounding practitioners' claims. To inform this conversation, you must first understand what is involved in a uterine transplant. The first step is for the woman to have her eggs harvested to be used in vitro fertilization. The second step for many women is to have a hysterectomy to remove their original uterus. If a living donor is used, she then has to have a hysterectomy to remove the functional uterus to be donated. After this, the actual transplant can occur. Once the transplanted uterus is shown to be functional, demonstrated by regular menstrual cycles, the woman can go through the rigorous IVF process. If IVF is successful, a woman will get pregnant and gestate the child. However, because of the transplanted uterus, she cannot have a natural vaginal birth, but is required to have a C-section. Generally, after one or two births following a uterine transplant, the doctors then perform a hysterectomy to remove the transplanted uterus to prevent complications that can occur from long-term use of immunosuppressants, as would be required to have a transplanted uterus remain in the body long-term. Given the extensive nature of this process, there are many different potential benchmarks of success. For example, the surgeons performing the transplant may decide that simply undergoing the uterine transplant free of surgical complications qualifies it as a success. This was the case with the very first uterine transplant, performed in Saudi Arabia in 2000. Although the surgery was declared a success initially, a hysterectomy had to be performed 99 days later due to complications. A second metric of success may have more to do with the way the uterus works after the transplant. This was the case with an attempt in 2011 in Turkey. This attempt was deemed the first uterine transplant gaining long-term function and was deemed successful due to the subsequent 6 menstrual cycles post-surgery. The patient then underwent IVF and became pregnant in 2013, but later had to terminate the pregnancy due to complications. Another seemingly obvious notion of success in uterine transplants is for the woman who received the transplanted uterus to actually become pregnant and bear a child. The first live birth following a uterine transplant occurred in Sweden in 2013. While this seems an obvious way of declaring the process a success, there is uncertainty over the appropriateness of doing so. Do the doctors instead have to wait for a subsequent pregnancy, live birth, and hysterectomy before making such a statement? Although some of you might feel that these differences are just semantics, I caution you about the power of language, especially when it comes to medicine. One argument a practitioner might make is that these women are part of a research trial, and that the metrics used in assessing research subjects are very different than those used with patients. And although this is true, I doubt these women personally feel this distinction between research and treatment. Furthermore, given the fact that their goal in this process is to become pregnant and bear a child, it seems unimaginable that anything other than that outcome could be seen to them as successful. How then do we correct this problem? I think this matter is more than a better consent form that states the uncertainty of the process, but rather that the fix is much more nuanced. It requires doctors, researchers, and hospitals to reframe their understanding of research and success to match the goals of the subjects of the child, the women receiving transplanted uteruses. The hope is that with this reframing, the researchers are better equipped to walk alongside these women through a very long and difficult journey. I'm Meg Weiss, and you're listening to Bioethics Radio.